And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about we are down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville. We got Tuscaloosa over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, I am in number one of the triple dipper right now. I'm calling it straightening the curves. And what I mean by that is the Democrats have been throwing us curveballs now since they got, you know, Biden in office, and it's been a heck of a 2 years. Well, I feel like we're starting to straighten some of those curves out now. I think we're starting to see that literally some of the policies and regulatory actions and poor decision-making being foisted on us by the Democrat Party, especially the Biden administration, is finally starting to see its sort of its payback, its comeuppance, if you will. At the very least, it's seeing that it can't just get away with it. And that is good to see. It doesn't mean it's all done. We're not fixed. We haven't turned the corner fully. But what I'm saying is this: I can smell the cook fires, if you know what I'm saying. I feel like we're coming into a different time, and I'm glad. And I want to bring that to you as a source of encouragement. You know, Charlene and I were talking this morning about it is not enough to be complainers. We need to be restorers. And I think that's a very healthy point, that we need to make sure that we're not just sitting around griping. I've said before multiple times, I do not want this show to become a 3-hour gripe session. I don't want to be that bitter old dude with the microphone just going, get off my grass all the time. I mean, it's not healthy. It's not good. We need to be restorers. We need to be looking at how best to steward that which we've been given and make what we've been given better. And if the other side wants to try and, you know, tear up our grass, we can yell, get off our grass, but we got to make the grass better. First story I've got in this vein is I couldn't help but notice that it's becoming apparent that they're not able to get away with it when confronted with the facts, they just don't like to answer the question. Story came out on theblaze.com yesterday. October 25th, TheBlaze.com reporting on what happened when a Fox News reporter asked Karine Jean-Pierre, the glass-ceiling-breaking communications director at the White House, Fox News reporter uses facts to call out Biden's falsehoods on the economy, and the press secretary abruptly stops questioning. Yeah, that's what happens when you're confronted with facts and you don't like them. Next question, that's what happened. So it says Fox News reporter Jackie Heinrich on Monday directly called out the Biden administration's repeated falsehoods about the economy. So as election season heated up, it says President Joe Biden has claimed repeatedly his policies have resulted in record deficit reduction, a record number of jobs created. But the truth is that deficit reduction and job creation are a result of the economy just returning to its pre-pandemic normalcy. He's not been creating new. He's just been the recipient of the fact that society is starting to return to just kind of where it was. So he says the CBO projects the federal budget deficit will shrink to $1 trillion. It was $2.8 trillion last year. That the annual shortfall would average $1.6 trillion from 2023 to 2032. The deficit continues to decrease. That's all good. Meanwhile, despite Biden's claim he's created 10 million in jobs, that job growth is really just related to people actually returning to the workforce. It's not new jobs. It's just going back to pre-pandemic levels. So after pointing out these facts, Jackie Heinrich then asked Karine Jean-Pierre why Americans should take Biden seriously. She asked, quote, how are people supposed to take this kind of messaging on their most important issues seriously when some of this feels like smoke and mirrors? Jean-Pierre did not answer. She just kind of did a stump speech for the Democrats. So Heinrich asked the question again and said, none of his programs have actually reduced the deficit. It just kind of happened on its own. And then at that point, Jean-Pierre just abruptly shut her down and moved on to the next reporter. So what you're seeing there is facts don't go in their favor. They can't answer the question. They're trying to throw curves, and we're starting to straighten out those curves. Because now we're getting data that says, oh, no, 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 no. You don't get to say you're boosting the economy. All that's happened is that people that have been hiding out for the last 2 years are finally going back to work. Which I'm not sure why it's taken some people so long to go back to work. I mean, how many of y'all have gone to a fast food place and the dining room is still closed? Boomer, you get your hand up. I see.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's Mr. Boomer in the first row. You have a.
I do. I've done that a few times.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, or longer waits at a bank or a restaurant or someplace because they don't have staff.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just at a place the other day for lunch, and they only had one waitress. And it was a fairly big place.
And she was in the weeds, I bet, too, wasn't she?
Yeah, it took like an hour to get something.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right, straighten the curves. Next story I got, though. This happened in Alabama. So you've heard multiple times we've had my friend Becky Gerritsen on the air. She's with the Eagle Forum. Eagle Forum is a conservative advocacy group. If you remember, we passed, I say we, the state legislature in Alabama, one of the things, I mean, I applaud, when they do something right, I'll call it. And one of the things they did right this past year was Alabama became one of the first states to pass a law to ban the transgender therapies and surgeries on minors. It's called the VCAP bill, which stands for the Vulnerable Child Compassion and Protection Act, VCAP. And Governor Ivey signed it into law back in April. And then immediately a lawsuit was filed with the ACLU being involved. And then the Biden Department of Justice decided to jump into the lawsuit and also extend their help to the plaintiffs to sue the state of Alabama, the Biden administration, the DOJ, suing the state of Alabama because duly passed legislation to protect children was deemed in some way to be a violation of the 14th Amendment. So in May, federal judge here in Alabama, Lyles Burke, I know Judge Burke, he's a good dude, but he enjoined part of the act. In other words, part of it, he basically said, okay, stop the surgeries. You can't do the surgeries. You can keep doing the medications, but you can't do the surgery right now until we hear the whole case. I mean, I wish he had just said, no. It all goes into play. Anyway, the bottom line is it's partially enjoined. In the meantime, the Biden Department of Justice decides to send a subpoena to my friends at the Eagle Forum, a very invasive subpoena. Every email, every document, every anything you've got for the last 5 years that relate to the VCAP bill or other things related to similar legislation, communications with legislators, reports, internal memos, everything in the world, it was way over the top. Well, little old Eagle Forum, Alabama, they said, well, by God, and they filed a motion to quash. And the story I've got right here from the Federalist shows that the judge did indeed grant the motion to quash. Becky Gerritsen came on and talked about that, but she didn't have the order in hand yet, although it was seen that it was going to happen. Well, Judge Burke on Monday of this week said, you know what, Department of Justice, you went too far. You can't have all that. Here's what he said. He said, the subpoenas command the Eagle Forum to produce 11 broad categories of evidence ranging from draft legislation to communications to polling or public opinion data to social media posts. These materials are unlikely to reveal or lead to any information that would help resolve the fundamental issues in this case. Thus, the requested material has little, if any, relevance for purposes of discovery. And the motion to quash was granted. Now, the DOJ may submit a more narrowly tailored second subpoena, but right now, it remains to be seen. All I do know is this. They tried to get in there and muscle their way through, and they got their hands smacked, and I'm glad of it. But here's one of my favorite stories of the day. Boomer, did you see this when we were doing the resources on the New York City, the COVID vaccine mandate, the firings?
Yes.
Yes.
I got super excited about that. I was like, what in New York? What?
Is that why I could hear you downstairs running around the room?
I was. I was kind of jumping up and down.
Post-millennial, dated yesterday, October 25th. Y'all, this is huge. And I'm hoping that what we're going to wind up seeing is that this in some way establishes precedent for going forward. Now, understand, as a lawyer, I can just tell you, on a federal level, if you have something that happens anywhere in the 11th Circuit, like what happens in Georgia, can be carried as a precedent for immediate use in Alabama. That's a primary law. If it happens outside of our circuit or in another state's law, it can be an occasional reference of what they call secondary law. Secondary law carries far less weight. Like, for instance, in Alabama, if I filed a brief in an Alabama court, what they said in a California court could mean little, if anything. All right? State laws are different, and certainly the culture is different. And so, yeah. But nonetheless, there are things, though, that can be used and can establish arguments worthy of consideration, even though it came from another state. This one happened this week in New York. Bam! Headline, post-millennial. Are you seeing this reported much elsewhere? No. Breaking, New York City ordered by the court to reinstate all of those fired for COVID vaccine mandates. Not just reinstate them, y'all. Reinstate them with back pay. On Tuesday, the New York Supreme Court ruled that the New York City must reinstate all employees that were fired because of their vaccination status. The order also states that for those fired, back pay must be issued. Quote, based upon the petitioner's vague denials of their exemptions, the fact that they were kept at full duty for several months while their exemptions were pending, the mayor's executive order granting exemptions to certain classes of people, and the lifting of the private sector mandate, this court finds that the commissioners as well as the mayor's executive order are arbitrary and capricious. The last thing you want to be labeled as a public official is arbitrary and capricious. Those are the two Scrabble words that will get you in the most trouble. Arbitrary and capricious means you had no justifiable grounds for the decision you made, and therefore you may be liable for having made it. Not maybe you in your personal capacity, but at the very least, you in your official capacity. So that being said, we have an order now in the New York courts. If one of the most liberal jurisdictions in the land can find that the firing of individuals very subjectively related to COVID vaccine mandates should result in them being reinstated with back pay, you have to look at it and go, if the liberal courts can say that, what could happen, here in Alabama? What could happen when you have industry leaders who chose to make the arbitrary decision to do that? What could happen in other states where the, like Michigan, where the governor allowed that kind of thing to happen? It's interesting to look at, and I think this is a huge, huge, huge win against COVID policies. This is literally the big hand of government getting its wrist slapped in a big, big way. The court also stated in that case, by the way, being vaccinated does not prevent an individual from contracting or transmitting COVID-19. As of the day of this decision, CDC guidelines regarding quarantine and isolation are the same for vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals. The petitioners should not have been terminated for choosing not to protect themselves. Big, big doings. All right, I got more of this. Straighten the curves. What happens when big government gets its wrist slapped? I love this. This is the kind of thing that we need to hear because it's encouraging to know that if you fight back, you can win. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We got more. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, I got a stack of stuff here in the same topic, but I see I got a caller on the line, so I'll grab that rook. Is that Wolverine Dan? Wolverine Dan, how you doing, man?
You got the right bumper music. Cat scratch fever, baby.
There it is. Michigan born and bred.
That's right. You sure? I love that, man. Anyway, hey, let's talk about the debate last night. Now, first off, I had a hard time finding it, and I did, okay? And I told my wife, and said, we got to see this. So we're watching this thing, okay? First off, let me start with a couple things. Mid-Oz suit looks good. It fits properly. I don't care how good your suit is. If you don't have it tailored properly, now the suit Fetterman was wearing, it looked like a bed sheet with a head on top.
He was a wall of cloth. I will admit, a wall of cloth.
I'm telling you, dude, I'm a 52 to 53 shoulder length, width-wise. I'm big on top, and I got a narrow stomach, a narrow midriff. So I have to buy a suit that's big off the rack, and I get it tailored. This guy should have enough money, or the Democratic Party should afford for him to have a tailor, first off. Now, second off, I want to show you some parallels, okay? Yes, Fetterman had a heart issue. He had a heart attack or a stroke. But let me show you this. When you watch Joe Biden, doesn't he have some of the same similarities as Federer? What's his face? I forgot his name.
Oz.
Right, the candidate.
Oz and Fetterman.
Yeah, Fetterman. Yeah. So he has the same tendencies, okay? in the same issues as far as forgetting and whatnot, just like I just did, okay? But the point is this. I mean, that should concern you as a voter. And if you're one of those people that pre-voted, my friend, you just threw your vote away. Or do you feel me? You must feel really bad at being a Democrat saying, oh, my God, I voted for this guy. And, you know, you can't just throw these people up and then backpedal with the media to make them look better. You need solid candidates that not only know what's going on as far as with the country and issues we have, but are well-spoken, because it's important to have that polished on when you speak in front of people.
Listen, I got to tell you, my wife was telling me this morning, I didn't see it, but she saw a panel on, I think, Fox News, and they had a panel of reporters who had been covering the debate last night. And one of them said she was sitting in the reporters, you know, annex or whatever, and thought, I'm getting nothing out of being here. It's like a bubble. So she went down to a local bar and sat there watching it on the TV in the bar, but that gave her the chance to see people's reactions, you know, mainstream folks' reactions to it. She was shocked by how many people said they were not aware that Fetterman was that bad off, like they had not been paying attention.
Well, just like nobody was aware about Hunter's, what Hunter did, and even what Joe was doing to his, you know, well, the armoire or the thing that his daughter was writing up, his diary.
Yeah, the diary, what, yeah.
You know, she wrote, yeah, come on. People didn't know about those things, Phil.
Because they weren't trying to know. Things,
well, exactly. That's the point, okay? You got to get your head out of the sand, for crying out loud. The crap, it doesn't matter what parties, I've said that many times at this radio station. Look at the total picture and make an educated decision. And I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Well, you're sharp enough to see this one, but and you don't even live in Pennsylvania. But I look at it and think that, I mean, last night, I one thing I did hear in the aftermath, I was coming back from a political gathering that I'd been at, and I was listening to the aftermath of the debate on the radio, and I think it was Molly Hemingway who said, on the one hand, while she sees this being a win for Oz politically, she saw it as a complete loss for Fetterman personally. She thought, who in his family, who in his close surroundings, who in the people who are supposed to care for him thought it'd be a good idea to let him go out there and have to endure that? Because it was obvious he was out of his element, unable to respond, did not know what he was doing half the time, couldn't speak, and she basically said shame on them is what she said.
Phil, just like Jill Biden, it's the same thing. My wife says that. Why does she let him do this? Okay, now, Fetterman kept bringing up this other thing that really bothered me. Okay, this isn't a socialized country. It's prosperity. It's about entrepreneurs. Oz worked his butt off to make the kind of money he made because he's a brain surgeon or a doctor, and he invested wisely. So what, you're going to punish him or badmouth him for doing what everybody wants in America? Well, I shouldn't say everybody, because there's a lot of people who want socialized stuff. But to be successful and to be able to be in a situation he is, I would love to be that way. But you know what? I don't need to be, because I'm comfortable in who I am, and I'm very grateful for what I have. Hey, guys, I got four cars. I own four cars. Why should I own four cars? Because it's America. I want them, and I can.
Like you couldn't enough. Wolverine Dan, appreciate the call, man. You have a great day. Oh, wow. Well, that just took the rest of the segment pretty much there, didn't it? You know, I hadn't planned on digging much into that, and I guess what I'll do is we're going to have Tuberville calling in a few minutes. We'll take the time to talk with Senator Tuberville. I may come back and just revisit some of this content that I've still got, straightening the curves, because I think you guys need to hear about policies that are bouncing back on the Democrats. Be encouraged by the fact that policies are bouncing back on the Democrats. But I will say this with regards to the Fetterman, the whole debate last night. Those of us who pay attention already knew from afar that Fetterman was an impaired individual. And I'm not saying that as a derisive comment. It's just obvious that he is not capable. He is not able to do the job. If you cannot successfully process the information necessary to then debate openly on the legislation in front of you, how can you possibly be a U.S. Senator? Well, that's where we are. Pennsylvania? I mean, some of our podcast listeners are in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania? Y'all can't vote for Fetterman. It's literally almost insulting to the American public for y'all to send that guy to represent you in D.C. Okay, listen, stand by. State's U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville is going to be calling in just a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Good interview there with Coach Tommy Tuberville. So I keep calling him Coach. Senator Tommy Tuberville. He calls himself Coach. It's on his official website, by the way, Coach Tuberville. I'm not so sure he didn't change his first name to Coach. I don't know. Maybe he did. But anyway, the bottom line is, for those of us that remember the days in the SEC when he was willing to walk in front of the Bama student section and hold up the magic thumb, we all knew we had a coach at that time. So, hey, I gotta say, this is going to be a very short segment here. I ran long with him on purpose because I didn't want to just cut down that conversation, especially when he began talking about world events. I thought, let it ride, see what he has to say. But I'm looking over here at the text line, couple things. Jeremy from Huntsville, great text, Jeremy. Jeremy says, please pass it along to pray the November midterm brings the fruit or bears the fruit of a two-thirds majority in Congress, says the Senate and the House. I was raised to believe that we are to pray for specifics. I am specifically praying for two-thirds and the hearts of godly servants in that two-thirds. That's a great text. Great, Jeremy. Thank you so much. You make a good point, and yes, that is exactly the way it needs to go. We also had Tracy from Athens just texted in and said, War Eagle. There you go, Tracy. I told you Grandma Wanda had texted in earlier. I looked over on Twitter. By the way, Twitter, I just saw a text about Carrie Lake, the candidate for governor in Arizona, who is just destroying the press at every single, I mean, and she, it's so funny because she never raises her voice. She just, it's like something about her demeanor. They don't know what to do. And so she, she's literally in a, some type of a town hall, and her, Katie Hobbs is who she's running against. And Katie Hobbs is, I mean, I think Carrie Lake's going to win, but Katie Hobbs refuses to debate. And you know why, because I can tell you right now, Carrie Lake would just eat her lunch. But Carrie Lake just said, I don't want to be a mean person. I do love all Arizonans, and she, Katie Hobbs, is an Arizonan. I respect the fact that she studied and went to social work, and I'm looking forward to her getting back into that field. There's a lot of need for that. That's the kind of thing she does all the time. It's just funny. We got great sound bites from multiple candidates around. I mean, I saw Herschel Walker up on the big screen a while ago speaking. He's really come up in the polls. I am understanding that, of course, Dr. Oz, I mean, it was a low bar, man. I mean, you won that debate hands down, but the threshold of success was not very high to surmount with the impairments of Fetterman. And then, but what I did hear, though, that I saw bits and pieces of it. Out in Arizona, Mark Kelly, the Democrat incumbent, is really got his hands full with Blake Masters, the Republican. And Blake Masters had an amazing debate not long ago. That was good to hear. I've also seen, too, in the polls, I mean, this is why I say red wave, because it's not in one sector. We're seeing right now that Lee Zeldin, the Republican congressman from New York, may very well take the governor's race in New York, which is not easy to do, against Kathy Hochul. I mean, he destroyed her in a debate the other night. The same is true for what's going on up in Michigan. Gretchen Whitmer, the death camp queen for COVID, she literally is falling behind to the point that we may see a Republican, I think her name is Tudor Dixon, taking that office. It's across the board, praying for the red wave. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll come right back, jump right back into that first topic, straightening the curves. Hang on, we'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. I mean, this show runs down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Time now, 3:35 p.m. Boomer, how are we halfway through the show?
Already halfway through.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
This one's flying by. Yep. All right. Hey, listen, I'm going to jump right into that topic that we were – I mean, I got a stack of stuff, so why not? So, Boomer, is this going to be like a single dipper day?
Well, it very well could be because we got the Grand Council coming up.
We still got Grand Council, top of the hour. Yeah, my brethren Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson join me. I don't know. We'll see, man.
Maybe. We'll see.
I don't know. Maybe we throw out one of those red meat questions and just let the phones blow up for a while and just see what happens. We'll just have fun with it. All right. Jumping back in, straightening the curves is what I call the first dipper on the triple dipper for the day. And what I mean by that is – Democrats have been throwing curveballs now. They've been trying to make the road windy and difficult for the last 2 years, and I feel like 2 years in, we are starting to straighten the curves. When I say that, I'm not saying everything's better. What I'm saying is we are seeing the numbers coming back that they can't argue with now. We are seeing the courts rejecting their policies. We are seeing some of their policies falling apart right before their eyes, and they can't deny it anymore. What we're seeing is that some of the things they're doing are having the bounce back that they did not expect, or at the very least, they did not want. And I'm glad. Here's a classic example. Democrats trying to grapple with school fallout from school closures. This is off a website called Based Politics, dated October 25th. Democrats trying to grapple with fallout of school closures. Well, so the article starts off saying, you know, getting to say I told you so can be sweet, but it's also a sour phrase when you look at what we're having to say I told you so about. It says, while most of us spent the vast majority of 2020 and 21 being censored online and labeled as grandma killers or conspiracy theorists or selfish for just presenting basic data and common sense facts, history has proven us right on literally every front. It has. It literally has. This week, a New York Times headline read, quote, math scores fell in nearly every state and reading dipped on the national exam. This is sad. The teachers union had so much sway. Schools shut down. Remember 14 days to flatten the curve? We lost an entire school year for a lot of kids. And it's awful. And it's showing. The report says, quote, U.S. students in most states and across almost all demographic groups have experienced troubling setbacks in both math and reading, according to an authoritative national exam released on Monday, offering the most definitive indictment yet of the pandemic's impact on millions of school children. It went on to note that, not the pandemic, but the government reactions to the pandemic. The pandemic didn't stop kids from learning. The government's reaction to the pandemic stopped kids from learning. In Alabama, it was inexcusable to just literally say, y'all log in and we'll do what we can. There's nothing to log into when you don't have internet. If you don't have a computer, what do you do? Are you doing your homework on a smartphone? And there were some innovative solutions. There were attempts made. By the way, I am proud of some of them. It's very creative when you do stuff like take a school bus, turn that school bus into a Wi-Fi hotspot and park it in a Walmart parking lot and let kids have to drive there and do their homework in the parking lot. I get it. It's not ideal. At least you did something. That was a solution. That happened. That happened right here in Alabama. That was not uncommon. That happened in multiple places. When rural kids don't have internet access at their house. Well, okay. We're seeing it now. These policies of keeping schools shut down, and not just in Alabama, by the way, I'm talking about nationwide, and it was far worse in other places. We got kids back to school ahead of others, and I get that, and I'm proud of that. Alabama didn't necessarily lead the way, but Alabama didn't you know come up in the full rear in terms of reacting and overcoming and getting rid of some of the COVID shutdowns. It was still bad, but not as bad. But what we're seeing right now in this study from Base Politics says, predictably, the research found that these declines were especially pronounced among demographics that were already vulnerable. And while they didn't spell this out, one can assume that means children who belong to minority groups and lower socioeconomic classes. Yes, it's true. It's true. We did these kids a great disservice by allowing the teachers' unions and allowing feckless school boards and others to keep our kids out of education, and now we're seeing the results. Now, that's not a good news story per se, but if there's good news in it, it's the fact that we're being proven right and we'll have data to go forward with. Next one, story from the Epoch Times. Poll, 95% of Americans are concerned about the rise in food prices ahead of midterms. Meanwhile, as Democrats continue to pivot towards abortion as their big midterm election campaign issue, story from the Epoch Times dated yesterday, a Pew Research Center poll revealed that nearly all Americans are concerned about the rise in the cost of food and consumer goods due to inflation. I mean, Charlene and I, we see it every day. We're empty nesters, and still the cost of groceries just for a house with two is far more than it was before. Boomer, you got a full house. I mean, you're seeing it.
Oh yeah, it's bad because I told my wife, I said, just don't even tell me what you spend anymore because I don't want to know.
And by the way, how often do we have bacon now?
Oh yeah, exactly. I love bacon.
Is there a man out there that doesn't like bacon?
I hope not. I hope they all love bacon.
If you're a man doesn't like bacon, I'm gonna have to question your manhood. Can
it's
I do that?
The guy that went in to meet Joe Biden.
I'm about to get an angry text from somebody. I can tell already. I just sense it coming. But hey, listen. A Pew Research Center poll revealed that nearly all Americans, according to the Epoch Times dated yesterday, are concerned about the rise in the cost of food and consumer goods due to inflation in a worrying sign for Democrats ahead of the midterm election. So it's, by the way, remember this is straightening the curves. What I'm doing is pointing out the fact that we are seeing that Democrat policies, liberal policies, are not working. They are not resonating. Here's another one. A Pew Research Center poll. By the way, Pew is not always leaning towards conservatism, if you know what I mean. But the poll was conducted last week. It showed that 73% are very concerned and 22% are somewhat concerned about the rise in prices, while a combined 93% are very or somewhat concerned by the rise in gasoline. Another 87% similarly concerned about the rise in housing costs. 70% concerned about the stock market. What we're saying here is that economic issues are a driving force in the vast majority of people who are potential voters coming up in the next, 13 days. The survey finds that inflation remains the dominant economic concern for Americans, Pew pollsters wrote. In fact, the three top concerns among seven items included related to prices for food, consumer goods, and gas and energy. It goes on to say some Democratic strategists and pollsters are now saying that their party's lack of focus on dealing with inflation will likely harm candidates. In fact, not just that, I would go one step further. It's their policies that have driven it to this point. Yeah, it's not just that they should have focused more on how to deal with it. It's they shouldn't have been the ones who caused it. It says a month ago, according to an article in The Hill, a month ago, it looked like not only were the Democrats poised to hold the Senate, the question was, were they going to be able to get, two extra seats, said a Democrat pollster who worked on Barack Obama's presidential campaigns. Now I think the hope is just to hang on. And another one, a guy named Mike Lux, a Democrat strategist, said inflation should have never been downplayed. Here's the thing, though. They would have had to have been disingenuous. They would have had to have said, gosh, this is so bad. Oh, by the way, we're the ones in charge, and it's so bad. And that's the reason why they did it. They were hiding from their own situation. They created it. I will say this. Next article I've got kind of ties right in. Fox News, dated today, the inflation electorate will hold Biden and Democrats accountable at the midterms. It's written by a guy named Mark Penn. It says, if you're under 60, you've never experienced this in your life. It's called inflation. It haunted us back in the 70s, but we banished it until today. It's far more pernicious than any tax. It hits lower-income folks and seniors in their retirement. It robs them of their purchasing power. It destroys their savings. It's visible everywhere. Gas stations, supermarkets, all of it. In 1980, it says, Ronald Reagan won the presidency by convincing people that America could not stand four more years of President Jimmy Carter's economic policies. It would be solved by a combination of higher interest rates and then pro-growth policies that renewed Americans' faith in their country and in a future for their kids. It's true. I've said it on the show multiple times. We are going through a difficult time. If you're a conservative, then you know for a fact, politically speaking, we're going through a difficult time. If you're just anybody who buys groceries, you're going through a tough economic time. A lot of things happening out there in the world that make things more difficult than they should be. It happened in the 70s, and I've said multiple times on this show, it took a Carter to bring us a Reagan. Don't forget that. It took a Carter to bring us a Reagan. It's taking a Biden to bring us another Reagan. I don't know how we can possibly forget our history. If we know that the Reagan era worked, if we know that we were prosperous, if we know that we were strong as a nation, if we know that we are proud of who we are as a people, if we know that there was a great sense of an emerging new and more revitalized United States of America in the Reagan era, then why do we let it slip away? I don't know how that happens. But it took a Carter to bring us a Reagan. And I'm just praying that we're back there again. Boomer, I tell you what, brother, let's take a break about 30, 45 seconds earlier than usual. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back, finish this segment up, and then top of the hour, you guys are going to want to stay tuned. The Grand Council with my brethren, Dale Jackson, Jeff Poor, and little old me, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. I'm looking at the text line over here. What do we got here? I responded back to Tracy from Athens saying War Eagle. And then we had another one. Where did it go? Brandon from Athens just came back and said, Roll Tide. And then you said, you replied, that's you. I was trying to figure out, what's he replying? Oh, it's you. You said Roll Tide back to him. Okay, Boomer. Yeah, you got the Boomer's on the text line too. And Brandon replied back, that's got to be Boomer, LOL. What else we got on that text line here? I mentioned bacon a while ago. Ken from Decatur just texted in and said, bacon, it's what for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and dessert. I agree, man. You know, by the way, Boomer, and what was painful for me was they did not have any in stock when I was there.
Oh.
But when my son was, his job had him down in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
We went down for a visit, and there was a bakery not far from their house that they said, we got to go by there. Like, they got the best stuff. And I'm like, okay, cool. I wanted it, but they didn't have it. Chocolate-dipped bacon.
Whoa.
I mean.
That actually sounds really good.
I'm almost sure that that's like a new food group. It's like, there's vegetables, there's fruits. There's starches.
I will say,
and there's chocolate dipped bacon.
My wife used to get brown sugar bacon, and that we had it for dessert.
Oh yeah, where do you get brown sugar bacon?
Well, up in Nashville, it was a Kroger's. It was a grocery store called Kroger, and they just did it in the meat section.
I just saw Kroger's buying out all of the Albertsons chain, so it's going to be huge.
Oh wow,
it's like $1 billion buyout or something.
That's giant.
So all right, listen. Next time you're in Nashville,
all right, gonna get some brown sugar bacon.
Yeah. I'm going to pay whatever the price is, just so you know. Brown sugar bacon. I'm having a bacon. I'm jonesing for bacon right now. Wendell from Baton Rouge says, go Tigers, but I'm pretty sure he's talking about a different Tiger, not the War Eagle Tigers. Grandma Wanda just texted in. What do we got here? She says, interview with Senator Tuberville was informative and encouraging. You're exactly right. He seems like he's telling it right, seeing it right. She says it's so important for most regular folks to be legitimately well-informed voters. Agree. It's hard to get the truth of the silent majority, she says, because the only news most folks get is from the mainstream media, the narrative headlines, the talk shows, Hey, I am a talk show, Wanda. Just so you know, but I agree with you. I know what you're saying. I appreciate that. Jenny from Decatur says our youngest Auburn grad when Coach was running for the Senate. Oh, she sent a picture. Oh, look at that. That's her daughter with Coach Tuberville in a picture there. That's awesome. Right there in front of Lynn Layton Chevrolet. She said he's a good man, so thankful he's in Washington speaking on our behalf. I agree with that. And Grandma Wanda just sent back, says, chocolate bacon? Yes, ma'am, chocolate bacon. What else we got on here before I go away from it? All right, listen, phones are ringing. You're welcome to call in. I'll take it. We got a few minutes before we go to the Grand Council. 833-687-4448. I got to tell you this. You know, when liberals put their policies in place, sometimes I wonder if they think about the second and third order effects. China is laughing right now, and we're seeing it. Why? Because they're saying it out loud. Breitbart.com dated 2 days ago, China boasts of soaring demand for its solar panels during Europe's self-inflicted energy crisis. God almighty. China's state-run Global Times boasted that the Chinese solar panel industry has, quote, gained a historic foothold in Europe thanks to European environmentalist policies that deprived the continent of reliable energy after Russia shut down its gas pipelines. This is the quote again, quote, demand for photovoltaic products has reached a new high, driven by surging natural gas prices amid the Russia-Ukraine conflict and the damaged Nord Stream pipelines. Lately, Chinese solar panels have gained growing popularity among European consumers, in addition to electric blankets and hand warmers. They're making out like bandits in China because of the policies being put in place by liberal politicians in Western countries. Wow. It's apparently now a $35 billion export business for sending out Chinese solar panels. I can't help but wonder. When you see a self-inflicted wound like that, you just can't help but wonder. Here's the other thing that's so interesting to me. You know, the Biden administration has been more supportive of unionization and upping the ante when it comes to unions in major negotiations and making it far more difficult for corporate America to just have the ability to have good faith negotiations. Why? Because the Department of Labor is part of the Biden administration, and the Department of Labor is leaning hard on unionization and union issues. Well, story right, you remember here about the rail workers? So just a few weeks ago, we were told, oh man, we're on the verge of a major strike. Rail workers nationwide may strike. If that happens, the supply chain goes into chaos. We're talking about transit workers. We're talking about freight rail workers. We're talking about getting goods from ports into markets. We're talking about farm to market. We're talking about people getting, you know, on the metro to get to their jobs. Cats and dogs living together, chaos. Well, we thought it was done. Biden administration, you know, the Biden administration, all about the union. They had it worked out. It was all good. They got them a huge pay raise. They helped get them the ability to, you know, basically have far more time off and sick leave. And anyway, guess what? Union rail workers are now unhappy with the new contract proposals from major freight railroads brokered by the Biden administration, and they say their voices are not being heard and arguing that the deal struck in September granted unfair leverage to the employers in a dispute that could very well result in a nationwide strike. We're back to where we started. Back to where we started because the rank and file has decided they don't want to approve this plan yet. It says workers represented by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division, International Brotherhood of Teamsters, there's a heck of a title, the third largest of 12 unions, became the first one to reject the new contract earlier this month. And they say they're mad that their own union officials accepted it. I'm thinking what's happening here is they feel emboldened by the policies of an administration that's all about the union. And being all about the union, so over the top about the union, has put them in a position now where they recognize they don't have to worry about good faith negotiation. Let's keep holding out for more because the DOL is going to come around and sort of help lean in on the negotiations. All right, folks, my brethren, Dale Jackson and Jeff Poor, be on with us in just a minute. The Grand Council, we call it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Homicide Ruffians out there, you are.